Hello and welcome to another Total Football Analysis magazine podcast. And I'm back in the UK this week, and I've just got out of the car with a nice long drive up to Newcastle United's academy, where we're meeting Aidan Rockall, who is the under-23 performance analyst for Newcastle United. So we've got the luxury of a face-to-face interview today for today's podcast. We're going to be going through the usual stuff, finding out a little bit more about Aidan's role, how analysis fits into the under-23s at Newcastle, etc., and all that good stuff. So over to you, Aidan. Thank you for taking up your... thank you for giving us some of your valuable time today. I mean, it's appreciated. It's coming to the end of the season and you've got a lot of stuff still going on. Why don't you introduce yourself better than I've just done?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you coming up, first of all. So, like I said, my name's Hayden, currently the under-23 performance analyst at Newcastle United Academy and academy analyst supervisor is like the second part of my title. So work with the 23s on a day-to-day basis and then sort of oversee the whole academy process from under-9s through to under-18s in regards to like how they approach analysis and how they're providing analysis. So that's my job in that show, really.
So in the under 23 bit, you're the guy who's doing the analysis, but then you're helping and guiding others in the wider academy on how to do good analysis. Is that
right? Yeah. So the structure within the academy. So myself as a 23s who solely works with the 23s.
Yeah.
We then got an under 18 analyst who solely works with the under 18s, and an under 9 to under 16 analyst who again works for those age groups. So all of us are full time. And like I say, I mainly work with 23s, but then just oversee that second side of things.
Yep.
So in regards to making sure that games are coded, making sure that our intern program, that interns come in and film the games, and just providing that support, but then almost like dish out the work to the other two analysts, as that's they also oversee those age groups.
Okay, cool. So how many people are on the sort of the analysis side of things here in the academy?
So the academy, like I said, so you've got myself, 23s, Joe Fry, 18s, and Liam Murray with the younger age groups. There's three of us based down here. In regards to the first team environment, there's two full-time first team analysts, and we've got one part-time analyst who works with our coach paint, Corin Hager, and does the annotation side of things. So yeah, six of us within Newcastle.
Okay, and how many players are you guys looking after there?
I'd say within the academy, I guess it'd be about 150.
Okay. So quite a lot of quite a lot of things to be coding and giving feedback on.
Yeah, I think the amount of games that we have in the academy, the turnaround's quick. And the coaches expect the games to be coded and to a high standard, so we've got to try and operate, get the games coded to a good quality, get the games filmed to a high quality so that when players and coaches watch the games back, it's not a hard watch to watch back.
Yeah.
It's easy to watch back.
Well, we'll come on to what a typical day or a typical week looks like for you in the academy in a bit. But tell us a little bit more about your background. I mean, one of these great things about podcasts is you can't really tell the difference. But I have to say yet again, Hayden is considerably younger than I am. So how did you end up being in this particular role?
Yeah, so first of all, so not from Newcastle initially, so from Essex. Did my university degree at Northumbria University, so I did 3 years undergraduate sport coaching degree, and I think when I went to university I wanted to be a sport coach, so
okay.
I had my coaching badges, had my badges, and it wasn't until second year when I was offered the opportunity to come in as a recruitment intern,
in
the recruitment side of things in the academy, so great opportunity to see how like an academy functions. And then in our third year, the first team analyst at the club came in and did a presentation. And to be fair, like analysis wasn't something that I was aware of as such.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a department I knew existed.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that side of football and how you can influence.
And how long ago was this? How many years ago was your degree?
4 years ago.
Yeah.
Probably.
Because that kind of shows how quickly analysis has grown.
Yeah.
I mean, when we were talking to Ender at Bristol Rovers a few weeks ago, I mean, he's 14 years in, but in that very early part of it, I mean, he was virtually building it as he went along. Whereas even now, as you say, 4 years ago, it wasn't something that's sort of top of everyone's mind. But it feels like it is more of the case now. More people are aware of the analysis side and are interested in it earlier. But it was a moment in your degree where somebody came and did a presentation. Okay, that's for me.
Yeah, really opened my eyes, to be fair. And my focus switched from coaching to analysis.
Mm.
So then, as I was already working within the recruitment department, I spoke to Billy, who now works for the first team, who was the head of academy analysis at the time, and he said, it's an opportunity for me to almost moved to the analysis side for my third year.
Yeah, okay.
So went through the interview process, got accepted onto the internship program, and then did the whole season, so similar to what our intern program interns do now. And then after graduation, moved back down to my parents in Essex, and then managed to get a full-time internship at Tottenham.
Oh, okay.
Which was really good. So working with the first team, so every day was like filming training, filming gym sessions, and then a bit of coding.
Yeah.
And then we would go to all the home games and do some live coding. So it's just a great like taste of the first team action what analysis is. And that was a good progression from Newcastle. And then unfortunately, it wasn't a job at the end of the Tottenham experience.
Right.
So then went through the whole interview process of going up and down the country trying to secure a job. And then the September after we finished in the May at Tottenham, got an email from Newcastle saying there's a vacancy within the under 18s, would you like to apply for it? And then applied for that, came up for the interview, and then got a job. And then from then on, with the 18s for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and then progressed to the 23s. Like I say, this was my second season with the 23s. That's my obviously current position.
That I mean, that's interesting because you do hear quite a lot of, well, I went and became an intern here and then there was a job for me at the end of it. I mean, obviously they've done a good job in that period to get the job at the end of it. But it's quite good, well, not quite good, but it's different to hear that you came up here and did a good job initially, but then you had to go away for a bit and then you did something else. But then they remembered who you were and doors started to open again because of the good work you'd done whilst you were an intern as well.
No, definitely. I think internships are so important in university. If you can juggle your academic side of things and your internship, when you leave, you've got an advantage over those that just graduated with a degree.
Yeah.
I think that's massive.
And are there many people who go to uni and don't get involved on the internship? I mean, that must be hammered home to people, surely.
Yeah, I think, like for me, being in like the student shoes when I was a student, I think any opportunity you just go for, there's nothing to lose. So even if it's not something you wanted to do, so for example, like the recruitment side of things, it was great to get an understanding, but so I wanted to be a coach at that point, so I wanted to see how recruitment functioned. But then hopefully like doors will open once you're almost like within the club. So I think that's really important. And then we've got quite a good success rate of those that have come into the club as an intern, worked hard, and then when people or other clubs come and say so-and-so's applied for a job, can you give a reference? We'll give a good reference. Honestly, I think it's about 20 clubs that people have gone on to
really
Newcastle, so we do run quite a good like program, which is,
and that's great then for the uni students who are local and they sort of see actually going and do this is going to be beneficial because it does lead to something at the end of it. So what was the main difference between what you were doing on the recruitment side before you then moved over to more of this type of analysis?
So the recruitment, so come in one day a week and it would basically just get me scout reports on the weekend.
Okay.
And we would like database and depending on how to be categorised.
Yeah.
And then just put on like a Excel sheet or some sort of template on the internet, and that was like a massive database that
held.
So that was just a one day a week thing that I would come and do.
And then what was it then about the analysis side that made you go, actually, I don't want to do the bit that I've just been doing. This is where I actually see my future.
I think it was more having an impact on performance. So if you can identify something and then it comes up in a game, I think it's really rewarding.
And
if it leads to a winning goal or something that's successful, that's great.
Okay, so before we move into like what it's like sort of on a weekly, daily basis then, that's a great sort of thing you've just brought up when you see something come off that you've identified and stuff. So give us an example of when that's actually happened and the buzz you get when you see it happen.
I think it could be seeing like open play, just like little patterns of play. So you could identify an opposition's patterns of play. So it could be playing out to the fullback, playing the sides of the centre mid and then the winger, peeling off and going in behind, just something like that. And if you identify that and then the defender's aware, so when it's happening in the game, the defender's thinking, okay, the winger's the name, just going behind. And just like dealing with the threat, so it might not be scoring a goal, but actually dealing with a threat. But then in regards to like set plays, which I found even more so important these days, like in the World Cup, I like that massively. We study set plays quite a lot, and then if certain routines come off in it, and we score, like you just think, oh, actually that's something that we've worked on, it's put into practice and we score from it.
Cool.
I think that's great.
Oh, good stuff. Okay, so if you wouldn't mind then, just give us whichever way works best for you, but give us sort of a day, a week or whatever in the life of your role.
Yeah, so we work and play games on the Monday usually in the Premier League 2. So it's pretty best if I go on a minus 4 day, start from there.
Okay, cool.
So minus 4 would be the Thursday. So Thursday is just a normal day. Lads would train. There's no real meetings. It's just endurance day and getting the lads ready for the build up to the game. And then on a Friday, we'll do the opposition meeting. So I've looked at the previous two games of that opponent and analyse the base in the 4 moments of the game. So,
and what are you using then to do that analysis? What tools do you guys have?
So we use Sports Code.
Okay, yeah.
Which is our main analysis tool, really.
Yeah.
So we use that to analyse and clip all games. And then, like I say, we use the four moments of the game and then set plays. So as I'm watching a game, we're trying to identify how the opposition played and how we can deal with their threats also.
Yeah.
So some of the clips might be the opposition and not scoring a goal, but then it's how we can deal with their their threats. So do that for the 4 moments, and then I then edit them and then title them depending on what they are. So the loss of possession could have like 3 or 4 different subsections.
Sure.
And it could be like 2 or 3 clips per section.
Yeah.
And then hand that over to the coach in the morning on the Friday before the meeting. He'll then trim it down to like an 8 to 10 minute video.
Okay.
And then I'll go into the meeting and I'll deliver that to the players.
Yeah.
So the coaching staff aren't in that meeting. It's just me with the players, which is great.
So how far into your sort of journey then was it before you were given that responsibility of being able to deliver that sort of in that meeting on your own?
Yeah, I think it's only this season, to be fair.
Okay.
So previously we would get the clips ready, the coach might trim them down, but then the coach would leave it.
Yeah.
And we have like text on the bottom of the screen so then players are aware of what the clip is and why we're showing them that.
Yeah, sure.
So it's great to have that trust from the coach that the points that he's trying to get out on the pitch are the ones that I'm trying to get out in the opposition meeting. And then after the meeting, when they do go and train, Ben would like question the players and say, okay, what have you learned in the meeting?
Yeah.
And then just try and like trigger some points and then that can help to... Not, I wouldn't say shape training, but there's a few things that training might adapt depending on how the opposition play.
Okay. So how long do you spend doing that sort of opposition analysis then, in terms of hours?
I'd say every game could be like 2 to 2.5 hours, just because you're stopping and starting, rewinding, checking various things. And then once you've done those two games, you could then spend an hour, once you've got it in your organiser, then clipping it and taking out certain clips and making sure it's in the right order. So if it's like in possession, it could be okay playing out from the back and then moving through the thirds rather than a random clips where it's not like a story. You want to have like a progression.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
So we try and sell it anyway.
Okay. And then with sort of like the under-23s now, I appreciate it's different to how it used to be, but how easy is it to predict sort of like the team that you're going to be playing against? And what I mean by that is literally the players that are being selected, because some might not be available for various reasons. There might be some players dropped down because they need minutes. And does that make it more complicated, or is it actually quite easy to predict?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think in regards to us, our style of play is always the same.
Mm.
So personnel might change, but how we play approach games would be the same. We might have some first team players drop down on the day of the game, so then we have to adapt to that. In regards to the opposition, I print the two team sheets of the previous game, so I have an idea of the formation on watching games and personnel. But then you could go to an away game and with them being a home team, they could drop 2 or 3 down, and that changes the complexion of the game. So we played Fulham away this season, we had Jonjo drop down to play. So it's great for the lads to experience playing with a first team player. And again, with Jonjo coming into our team, trying to fit into how style of playing and how we play. But then again, it's great to deal with various like threats from the opposition. So even last night we played Manu, who were excellent, to be fair. And it's great for lads to play against a team of that standard. And they had some lads that played against PSG in the Champions League.
Right. Okay.
So it's just that quality, but it's going to benefit our players in the long term.
Of course. Okay, so we're up to Friday now then. So you've delivered your meeting and training sessions sort of happened with a few little key pointers. How does it progress through?
So on that Friday, training's filmed by one of our interns, and then I will then code that training session based on what a session is, but then I'll also pick out good practice from those 4 moments. and then yeah. drop that into the organiser.
Yeah, okay.
And then Saturday is our set play meeting. So again, the same process. I go through defending corners, free kicks, attacking yeah. corners, free kicks, and also show the players our previous set plays from the previous game to right. see how we did.
Yeah.
And then again, the coach trims those clips down. I'll deliver it to the players, the same process. And then training's filmed on a Saturday, so the same process. I'll clip out good practice,
yeah.
add that to the organiser. Sunday, we don't do anything in regards to meetings. It's more just like a confidence day. You get okay. the players ready for the game.
Yeah.
The players will actually go through the set plays in the morning with the coaches.
Mm.
So that could be a walkthrough, or it could be an actual like deliveries into the box.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are we gonna deal with that? And we'll also send the players on like WhatsApp the videos of the set plays we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
And, like almost like professional examples.
Okay. So yeah, yeah, sure.
An idea about yeah. the type of delivery.
What it should look like. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Which we felt like recently has helped, I think, just a better picture rather than
yeah.
turning up in a day and trying to memorise the set plays
yeah,
on,
yeah, yeah,
on the wall.
Yeah.
And then Monday would be the game day. So I would get the organiser would have clips from opposition, clips from training, set play clips all into one,
yeah.
and then the coach will trim that down again into like a 10-minute video, and then he'll deliver that on the day of the meeting.
Yeah.
Play the game, so live capture and code when we can. So every home game we'll try and like, live capture. Sometimes yeah. it's more difficult.
And are you doing that live capture, or is it,
yeah.
is it one, yeah, okay.
So
yeah.
one of our interns will be filming the game, and then I'll just be getting the feed through Blackmagic into SportsCode, capturing it live, and then wired up to the goalkeeper coach.
I say this every single podcast, and you're smart because I think you've probably heard me say it on a couple of the yeah. podcasts. Why is it always the goalkeeper coach? We all every single podcast so far, it has been a wired up to the goalkeeper coach. And nobody's ever been able to answer why it's always the goalkeeper coach.
Not too sure.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we can understand why it's not the manager or the head coach,
yeah, yeah.
or maybe he's not his assistant because they're normally over by the fourth official. But it's always the goalkeeper coach.
Yeah.
Is it just because he's next to the line or?
Not too sure.
Yeah. Okay.
I can't
fair enough.
Sorry.
But I'm guessing then that you two must have quite a close working relationship then, because he needs to trust the information that you're passing and so on. So.
Yeah. No, I agree. I like to think I've got a good relationship with all the coaches. But again, I'm not too sure why it's the goalkeeper coach.
Yeah.
But we, again, I think we all know how we want to play and we've got the same ideas. So when I do relay information back, it's quite to the point. It's not long-winded. It's just, for example, it could be, are we controlling the game in regards to passes? So I could just say, okay, last 5 minutes, we're up 5 passes or
yeah,
down
okay.
5 passes. If we concede the goal, it being the goalkeeper coach, I might just have to look back at the goal and the point of contact. Was
yeah.
the keeper still moving? Was he set? And then try and give some quick feedback.
Yeah,
it's difficult when you're doing that, trying to code live.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah,
talk
yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really difficult.
Yeah.
If I can provide a little bit of feedback that helps the team, then that's
yeah.
my job. So.
And are you being more reactive at that point, or are you actually also looking and going, okay, so I've got in my mind this is how we said we were going to play tactically,
yeah, yeah.
but actually we're not exploiting their right back in the way that we learn in the videos that we did. Are you offering information or
yeah, a little bit? I'd say because the amount that I have to code, so I do both teams like main events as well as
yeah,
individual
okay.
players. So my code window is quite busy. So I'm trying to take the game in, but then I can't not code. So it is difficult. There is sometimes you do notice various things, and then you can communicate down. It's pretty easier. Almost like within the like, first team environments, so they might not code as much. It might be a bit more
sure.
to the point, and then they can maybe watch the game a bit more. Whereas just the current way we currently work, the code that I've got to do is quite busy. But I like to think I can still watch the game to an extent.
Yeah, yeah.
And at half time, when I go in and show the manager the stat pack, and
well, that was going to be my next question then. So what are you preparing for
yeah.
half time, and how long do you have
yeah.
to actually prepare it?
Yeah, so we have the code window, and we have an output window as well.
Yeah.
SportsCode created. So that just basically populates what I'm coding live into like a bar chart and various other things. And I'll basically screenshot that at halftime.
Okay.
When I go down at halftime, show the coach that. And then if there's anything video-wise the coach or goalkeeper coach wants to see, they can. So that's got to be ready as soon as I go down when
yeah,
I
yeah.
get in the changing room. And they usually look at that before they speak to the players.
Right,
so
okay.
give the players 5 minutes just to talk to themselves if they
yeah,
want to
yeah.
and then deliver the coaching points, and then you need to get out to then get up and get ready to code,
so you're not missing the
yeah.
first 5 minutes
exactly.
of coding. Yeah, yeah, okay. So it must be pretty hectic then.
You think 15 minutes is a long time, and you actually do it.
I know this is a daft question to a point, but actually there is an element of seriousness behind it. If you're in an away ground and you don't know the layout of the of where you're going, so that must make it even more stressful just to be able to, in that short period of time, get to the right door and get back again.
Yeah, it is. We had we played Stoke City away last week at the Bet365.
Yeah.
And at St James's, you can walk up the stairs within the ground and go to the gantry. At Stoke, you have to go underneath the ground, through reception, up an elevator, enter the gantry. And as I was doing it, I was thinking, this is going to be tight.
Yeah.
Really tight. And then managed to do it. Couldn't get in the changing room because it was security locked. So I had to wait outside and then go in last minute, shredding. Yeah. I was like, I need to go.
Literally dumping it into a 5 minute walk from where you go.
And also, our home games, we have a GoPro behind the goal for the goalkeepers.
Right.
So once I finish coding, screenshot the output window, go and get the GoPro, stop there, change the SD card, show the manager the output window, get out, put the GoPro back on, and then by the time you're there, the players are coming out and it's a bit of a swell.
People wonder why sort of at half times last as long as they do, and I reckon we're finding out now, but it's for the analysts to be able to get all their duties in before the whistle starts goes again. So we're now to second half of the game, and I presume you're doing what you were doing in the first half to a point, but then if particular points have been made at half time that have been pulled out and you're still not seeing that they're being changed or being rectified. Yeah. Is there a reinforcement of that at that point, or are the coaches fully aware by that point that we've already talked about at half time and they can see it without the
Again, they might communicate out to me various things, but I think it's more coach led from that point.
Yeah.
And Ben's really good at making notes throughout the game, which then forms our review process.
Right, okay.
So it's not like he's just watching the game and then watching it back after. Watching it as it's and making notes live, so they're really accustomed to that and good at making changes within the game. So rather than waiting for something to happen, they're pretty proactive in that regard.
Okay. So we get to the end of the game then, and say Ben's got his sort of list of notes. Does that then pretty much straight away form the sort of stuff that you're going away to pull for future sort of analysis, future meetings?
Or? Yeah, exactly. So I'll just take a picture of the notebook, and then I'll then clip out those notes and put it into those four phases again.
Yeah, okay.
Which links back to the opposition meeting, and then we'll review that the day after. Yeah. I might sometimes code various things I think could be important, but again, we can then discuss that with the coaching staff after. But again, the coaching staff, they're coaching.
That's an interesting point you made there, then. So you've got your list, but then there's a few things you've noticed that it's worth having in your back pocket just in case it's relevant or the right time to raise them. So.
Yeah, exactly. So even at half time, you can show the coach what they want, and you can say, I've seen this, or just give your opinion. And I think with that relationship, they trust you and they take that on board. And then rather you be vocal than want to say something about got a confidence or whatever to say it. So that's really important to be vocal, definitely.
And again, that's something that comes up quite a lot in these conversations, is around getting that balance between having their trust that you can sort of speak up. Also, you need to speak up to earn their trust, because if they don't know what you're saying, then they're never going to trust you. At what point in your career did you start to feel confident enough to actually start volunteering more without the sort of the? Because I think in any job, when you're doing something, there's still that element of is it the right thing to speak up.
So I think it's a really fine line between you don't want to step into the coach's shoes as a coach, but then you want to have a voice as an analyst. Yeah. You're the one that's watching footage, etc. I think for me, it was when I was given a license to take those opposition meetings, and then I thought, well, I can then have a voice, and the fact that we all work in the same office, that helps a lot. So we're always talking about football within the game. So it was, I wouldn't say it was like a point, it just sort of fluidly happened.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes sense. It's interesting you say that you're working in the same office as well, because I know that isn't the case in every place that I've been to. And then when you just got the 360 of a conversation going on, then you just pick up so many more things and it isn't disjointed. So rounded sort of process.
So, and also the coaches, language is really important. So you pick up things that they say, and then I'll try and translate that into the opposition meetings. And if the players come to me separately and they might want some advice, I then might have an input and say, look, I would go to the coach, but sort of know what the coach might say.
Yeah.
So I can then lead the players
and
to that.
I guess also, and the exact wording, almost like the Newcastle speak, so to speak, that you're saying it in the same way, so the messaging to the players is consistent, they feel safe with that, and it isn't a case of, well, it's that or it's that, it's actually, it's coming out in exactly the same way. That's really valuable.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It is really important, and if you do get the messages wrong, then that could influence how the players play, and they might do something that you've said that the coach hasn't said. So it's really important.
No, definitely. So okay, so we're now into that post match analysis bit. So then is there a debrief meeting with the players of okay, because we're recording today on Tuesday, and as Aidan said earlier, that you played Manchester United last night. So have you done the feedback meeting or the coding this morning, or what's the process here?
The review was, to be fair, the lads are off today actually, which doesn't usually happen. They just have a day off, but we would usually come in the next day. The review would be done in the morning, and then after training we'd go through it for about half an hour, 45 minutes usually. So yes, it's not too many points, it's probably like 12 to 15 clips maybe, but then every video is like explained in quite a lot of detail, so it's not really like skipped over, whereas opposition you might show the players, you might stop it here or there, identify a point, but it's more for the players just to get a snapshot of the position, whereas the review you really dig a bit deeper and into the hows and whys of things that happened.
Because this is, and we were talking about this before we started recording, this is surely where it starts to go into that development piece as well. Obviously results are important in any football, sort of any level of the football club, but when you then go into the under-23s and you're looking to create that progression, this is the development sort of side of it kicks in as well. So do you feel that you spend more time on the development side at this point than the actual, this is how we should have won a game of football?
Development's the main thing. It's weird because with them being under-23s, they're so close, the next step is the first thing, although the goal can be perceived as quite big. It's getting bigger. It's still development, so we're trying to develop almost like the whole player. So like I say, results are important and no one likes to lose, but if we can get the performance right the day, we almost feel that result will then take care of itself. And like I say, it's not the be all and end all, but it is nice to see performances come off and obviously win a few games and have that pressure trying to get a result.
So is it useful then, this is an off the cuff question, but is it useful then to lose a game like you lost last night to Manchester United, so you do you actually get the opportunity to go, well, here are some areas that we can actually develop in, and they have cost us a game, so to speak?
Yeah, no, it is. To be fair, like this season we've been doing really well, so we're in like the semi-final of the cup, which we play next week, we're in the playoff position league, so we're doing really well. And it's almost like when you win it, it's almost like a shock when you do lose, which I think it's almost a blessing in disguise to an extent, because when they're going to almost like hit home a little bit harder, that okay, we need to go back to the drawing board on what we need to do, and you can then identify where you have gone wrong and then you can learn from that. Whereas when it's all going right, it's easy to forget about things you're doing wrong in the game when you do win.
And also I'd imagine that players being players, that they'll be hearing, you know what I mean? I'm sure even when you've won, there's still areas where you go, we could do this a bit better, we could have done that with it. But I would imagine a lot of the players, whether they're Saints or not, are sitting there going, yeah, but we won last night, so I don't have to listen to that as much as I probably would if we lost. There's a more relaxed mentality towards it, I would have thought, because they've won the game of football. So
yeah, I know, we always try and obviously when the players play well, tend to play well, but then if we've won and haven't played the best game, then the players are quite almost like mark themselves out of 10 and
okay,
that's like 5 out of 10, and there's ways we can improve. And the way that we structure reviews is almost like, if we were to focus on like lost possession, it would be, here's some good clips if you're doing it, and then however, here's some clips where we haven't done it as well, and then how can we improve that. So even if we do win, it's not all the positives. It's got a mixture of not good and bad, I guess. But
so how do you get the players to buy into the analysis side of things? Because we're in an age group now where sort of your players would have grown up a lot more with the technology, whereas when I'm sort of talking to people on the first team level, you've got a set of players in there, they're a little bit older, understandably, and wouldn't have had as much of this analysis sort of levels in the early part of their career, and they've done pretty well with their career, so there is a slight mindset of, well, I don't need as much of this as others. So with players now that are coming through that are more technology savvy and get it a lot more because they've had it literally since year dot. How open are they to feedback, and how do you deliver that feedback?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think from like we have under 93s, under 23s all have games filmed and coded, so they can log on and watch games back. So it's almost the norm now, which is it's scary how
it's incredible to think that there's like under 10s sort of going home and like getting onto their tablet or whatever, even their own personal smartphone, and looking at the clips of the game they've played or their training session and learning that way.
No, it's almost amazing in one respect, but then you almost want to like rein in a little bit and focus on the key points. I think a lot of our players for the 23s buy into it. I think they do see it as important, so like they watch their clips back and they might write clip times or numbers down to then review with the coach one-to-one.
Yeah.
Which is
so they've got a bit of ownership in that themselves, where they go, right, these are the bits I'd like to talk about rather than the coach going, we need to talk about this.
Yeah, exactly. And some, again, I'm sure, like most teams, some players feel confident doing that. Some players probably watch the game back and like make their own decision, don't need that coach's input.
Okay.
So even when you're in a team meeting, I'm sure every team meeting is the same. No one puts their hand up when you ask a question
because
you've got to speak in front of a big group.
Yeah.
And then you get them one-to-one,
and
then they open up a lot more. So it's hard with the time you have the players to be that flexible and have loads of different meetings.
Yeah.
So we try and it could either be like talking to players on the pitch one-to-one and getting out of them there. If there is a discussion in the meeting room, there's usually one player says something that might snowball onto two or three, and then you get a conversation. So it's hard, like I said, every player's different and you've got some extroverts, some introverts,
so
you just need to... Again, us as analysts and the coaches, they work with them every day, they know their personalities.
And if you've got that many players and each one wants a respectful period of time, that's suddenly your day's gone from those sort of conversations. But we've even done anything as well.
So. I think the way it's going is we use Huddle, which is massive for us. So the players, like you say, can watch it on their iPads, on their Macs at home, on their iPhones in the changing room. So that team meeting isn't the only way they can watch clips.
Yeah.
So like they don't get all the information in the team meeting, they can access it whenever they want.
So literally the presentation that they've seen, then they can go back and watch it again as many times as they want.
Yeah.
Do you then take it down to a more granular player-by-player sort of thing? Or is it literally just the overall team presentation?
One is the main one we do.
Yeah.
And then there might be certain clips that the coach has pulled out that are individual ones.
Yeah, okay.
So they might say, okay, centre-back, left-wing or forward, can you stay behind?
Yeah.
And then the clips are pulled out and we'll just go through them and then we go through them in a bit more detail. But then, like I said, we try and give the players ownership. We're going, if you want to have that one-to-one interaction with the coach, all you've got to do is go through clips for 20 minutes, write down your numbers, and then almost book that time slot.
But then I suppose that puts the emphasis in the ownership on them to do a bit of homework first before they take up a time slot to have that conversation. You can't sort of rock up with nothing.
So that's good. So it's good to put a bit of, like say, ownership on them rather than us doing all the work and give them some responsibility, which they need to have to get up.
Now we've gone off on a slight tangent away from sort of like the structure of the week, but there's something that we said a couple of moments ago that I wanted to go back to around the younger age groups and the analysis sort of side of it. Now, academy coaching does get a little bit of a hard time at times around the fun, and I'm doing those annoying sort of air speech mark things at the moment, but the fun gets taken out of kids football. And now if we're going into like a world or a territory where, as we say, 10-year-olds can start to look at their games and they know what they're doing well and they know what they're doing not well, or what they could be doing better at the age of 10 or even younger, is there a danger there that it becomes too serious too soon, and then that kids could be sort of growing up worrying almost about, well, I'm not performing against this key metric, or I'm not doing this the way that this, that and that, over and above like just the normal everyday sort of side of, I had a bad game today, and you know at any age if you've played well or you haven't played well type of thing.
It's strange because every game is filmed, so you can't hide
those
days.
It's
amazing. And I think with the younger age groups, we currently code it the same way we would like the under 14s.
Yeah.
So all the players get their individual clips. I know some teams have gone away from that and they just code the main events, which could be a route to go down, because then when you do progress, you then get your individual clips. And then, because like I say, at that foundation level, it should be about fun. The players should, like, they're kids still. Mm. It should be about, like, again, technical, working on the techniques.
Yeah.
Then coming in, and it should be a chore to come and play football. They should be loving it. So then it could be, if there's too much analysis going on, and then, again, that could be detrimental. Again, with us having huddle and having access to players away from the academy, again, we can't really control what goes on away from here. So it's on huddle, and then how the players and parents choose.
Well, and you brought up the other P word there, the parents on side with, because, again, I suppose there is an inherent risk that if you're giving lots of information that can be then used away from the safe club environment, mm-hmm. that you're going to have some parents that embrace it and use it wonderfully. You're going to have some parents that probably aren't that interested and just let the kids do it whatever way. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have some parents that probably go overboard with like all this new information in front of them, and added pressure gets put on the kids in that. So that must be a very tricky sort of thing.
Is there any
education piece that goes in around this sort of stuff parents? Or?
Well, I mean, at the beginning of the season, we have a meeting with the parents and players and introduce them to huddle and tell them how it functions, what you can do. Like I say, we can monitor what players watch and how many players watch various things, which is provided to us, again, what players do away from here we can't control. But I'm sure the players and the parents are supportive within that process. I think it's really important when the coach has those team meetings with the younger players. If they do, it's not like a formal one. It could be really informal. So it could just be sitting down in front of a TV with the game and just watching the goals. Love to watch the goals.
Yeah, of course.
It, it shouldn't be about, okay, like, you've lost possession here. Yeah. Structure, that should be when you're a lot older.
But then I suppose then on the flip side of all this, that you're already sort of paving the way for them just to understand that analysis exists at a young age, and then by the time they're getting to 14, 15, 16, and it's becoming a bigger part of it, it's not alien to them. It's not like, whoa, what's this? If it's delivered in the right way early, it's just part and parcel of life. So.
Exactly, and I think the way that this goes, I'm sure every Cat 1 and Cat 2 academy has got analysis department and films all the games. So, like I said, we don't want it to be an alienated when they become older. So it's good to drip feed it into them, and then you'd hope that the coaches and how they use analysis would get a bit more detail as they got.
Yeah.
So I think that's when it kicks in a lot more.
Okay. So let's go back to sort of the remainder of the week then. So we're on the day, we're at the end of the day after the game we got to. So again, being a Tuesday. So then we're moving into Wednesday, and are we getting to the point where it all just starts again now?
Yeah. So after the review's done, I'll then watch the second game for the opposition. So I would have watched probably on the Saturday or Sunday, the first opposition game, the upcoming Friday. Tuesday afternoon would then be the second opposition game.
Okay.
Hopefully get it all done by Tuesday. Wednesday's usually a day off for the scholars and the professionals. So that's our day off. And then, like I say, Thursday's a day just to finish the opposition, make sure the stats are updated from the previous game. And then, like I say, the cycle starts again. It's difficult. Sometimes we have like a Monday game, then maybe like a Friday game.
Yeah.
Then like a Tuesday game. So you've then got to plan ahead and get the games done.
And are you working on sort of minus four for each game? So you're almost just doubling up on different days, or does it just become a little bit more, okay, well, a bit of that here, a bit of that there type of approach?
Yeah, we try and work off minus four. It does vary, depending on when we play, and it's important to get the players that rest time. So, like, for example, play Leeds away a week today, actually. So we're having, like, I think we're off with it being Easter. I think we're in Thursday, Friday, off Saturday, and then our 2-day lead-in.
Yeah.
So you don't follow that 4-day lead-in, but you still get the same work done.
Yeah, sure.
So I know a lot of teams will do that 2-in, off, 2-in game. So the way we do it is a little bit different, but we just structure it depending on the games and making sure that we liaise with the sports scientists in regards to, like, player load and how much you've done in training and injuries, all takes into, like, consideration.
Yeah.
And we can, you might find out you're off, like, for 2 days the day before. It might just change like that, depending on how the players are reacting to training, etc. So I'm sure you're aware, reactive environment.
Yeah, I know that flexibility is obviously key.
Yeah, massive.
That sort of side of it. Okay, so let's sort of look a little bit at the link between the under-23s and the first team then. So how much connection is there between, I suppose, your peer or your colleague doing the same job as you in the first team?
Yep.
Are you guys sort of trading data and stuff? How does that relationship work?
Yeah, I think so. We're the first team based at a different site. It's the same site, but just a different building.
Yeah.
We do liaise a lot. I think the way the first team play, they need to win games. Mm. So we do have players that go up and train with them and get an idea of how the first team environment works, yeah, and what it is to win. So again, I wouldn't say we share data or stats. They might ask for like video of the game and okay, carry through with the player up there.
Yeah, okay.
Coaching
yeah,
staff, which is good. So we're just trying to develop the whole player, so if they do grow up, then they can fit straight into the manager's system.
Yeah.
And if they, for example, recently we've been playing five at the back, which yeah, is similar to the first
team. Yeah, yeah.
So then if they do grow up, it's quite a smooth transition.
Yeah, of course.
But then if we can produce a player, for example, that plays out from the back and is comfortable doing it, it's a lot easier if you do grow up to a first team that wants to play like direct play,
yeah,
play direct, then going, okay, we played direct play at the 23s, but we went out and used
yeah,
to play
yeah,
the back.
Yeah, yeah.
We think that transition's harder.
Yeah, definitely.
So we try and create that holistic player, and then the manager can then tailor how he wants that player to play. That's how we approach it, really.
So I suppose with the success story of recent times from like a progression from under 23s to first team, Sean Longstaff.
Yeah, of course.
So how far in advance does that conversation start, really? Is it a case of like the first team have got their eye on the player for a while, or and they're just waiting for the right opportunity? Or is it a case of we've got a gap that needs filling, what's the best you've got, and it happens to be this player?
Yeah,
how does that work?
I think the first thing the staff and the manager really clued up on the players that are here,
yeah,
and the recruitment staff work really hard. So they're aware of the players that are currently in the system, the ones that are out on loan, which they monitor. So I think it's obviously if they are down a player in regards to a certain position, we'll look at the 23s and see
yeah,
if that can be filled, and then that player will then train with the first team and base it there for a certain period of time. So they are aware and they attend 23s games, they know what characteristics players have got, and they
yeah,
speak to the coaches on a regular basis and how the players are doing. So it's not that the first team are up there and it's an impossible task to get up there.
Yeah, yeah.
For his opportunity, so Sean's a shining example. He's developed with the 23s, so had a good season, 18 months in the Premier League 2, it's good for him, and then had the opportunity to go out on loan, which he's done well at Kilmarnock and Blackpool,
yeah,
and then he's took his chance. So again, it's a lot about time and chance, and if you do well, then you'll get asked to start there and then hopefully stick around. So just about taking a chance. And
what sort of ripple effect does that then have on the rest of the players in your squad? Because when they see one of their sort of peer group do it, there must be a case of, well, if he can do it, I can do it type thought process.
It's great. It's really good. Especially, I think, recently we've had, so like Paul Dummett
yeah,
went up and he's now yeah, the first teamer. Sean Longstaff, obviously more recent. So there is that pathway, which is great. So the players aren't just playing the Premier League 2, and some say it's uncompetitive, which I really disagree with. I think it's
yeah,
a good standard of football. Like you saw last night when you have certain Manchester United players playing, that's pretty better than
yeah,
players playing National League or League 2
yeah,
against players that haven't got that quality. So it's good. And when the players do go and train with the first team, they're aware that the managers ask for them, or the coaching staff have asked
yeah,
for them. And it's just up to them to then prove that they deserve to at least train with the first team if
yeah,
they try and stay up and around there.
And what sort of characteristics was Sean Longstaff showing within the under 23 sort of group then, in terms of the kind of things that you're measuring and,
yeah,
and that sort of side, for him to stand out in a way that made it a progression path for him?
Yeah, I think it's just being the ever like professional, really. So since I've been at the academy, he's like worked hard, he's got like quality on the pitch, and then when he has gone out alone, he hasn't almost gone being on the best player, he's actually working earned his shirt, which
yeah,
is down and stuck in the team. And then even like this season, he started playing for us when he was in the round of first team, maybe not getting a game.
Yeah.
Played in our Checker Trade games and a few league games at the beginning of the season, and was that real like a good voice in the change room.
Okay.
Almost felt like a first team player playing for the dropping down and playing.
Yeah.
And again, that's great for the players to know that he's not that much older, but he can see
yeah,
he's progressed that much. So it is good, and they're all close friends with each other. So it's
yeah,
not like he's now a first teamer. They're still like friends.
No, exactly. That doesn't mean that I can't talk to you
no,
anymore,
no,
guys. Type thing.
No,
okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, that's great. And it's one of those things in football, isn't it? There's always that at any club, at any level. It's always great when you see somebody from the academy start playing for the first team, and it's it just I'm sure for you guys as well, it must be a big sort of like a big moment for you as well, where, and not just one appearance and then that's it, but going in and actually making an impression and getting talked about at sort of national level and stuff. Yeah. That's got to be a feather in the cap as well, which is great. So
no, exactly. So I think the percentage of getting players through is getting higher and higher in regards to getting harder to get players through. So to get Sean through is fantastic, and all credit to the coaching staff and the support staff. And although we're such a minute of what's like his development, I guess it's nice to have a slight input, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Like I say, like Newcastle fans up here absolutely love a homegrown player, and
of course.
Especially when you hear his name being sung by the locals at the game, like it's nice that you've had a very small input in PSV's development. So.
Cool. So to finish off then, if we can then, Hayden, would you mind just sort of giving some thought to what kind of advice you would have to actually, let's do it a different way to the way we normally do it. Rewind the tape 4 years, and you've just, the light bulb's gone off that actually, analysis is what you want to do now. With now the experience that you've got, if you could tell that person 4 years ago a few sort of key tips that's going to make life at the damn site easier, what would those tips be?
I would honestly, if I was in my same position, so at university, in a city or a town where there's a football club, just volunteer because you can afford to do it. We're in at university, and you can. I would just, even if it's a free, so I did it for free for 2 or 3 years, and you just get by. If you want it that much, then you'll pursue it and go for it. And then, if you can, like say, graduate with a degree. I know a lot of jobs now you have to have a master's.
Yeah.
So I currently just have my undergraduate degree.
Okay.
It was almost like done after my education.
Yeah.
That
was
enough for me. So I know if
you, but do you think you'll go back and do more, or
I don't,
or do you think now the experience that you're getting on the job and then sort of like the achievements that you'll be having that kind of makes up for the not, I don't mean lack of masters and why you haven't got a masters, but the fact you haven't got a masters type thing.
No, I think that I have a lot of like people contact me and just say LinkedIn of students saying like how do I get a job, or there's some advice with me not being in that position of having like a masters. I think the experience that I've got, maybe through luck or just through perceiving and currently in my current job, I don't think you can't buy that experience.
Yeah, definitely.
So you should go back to university and get a master's to get a bit of paper. Okay, you might have more understanding academically, but to have that relationship with coaches, which you can't teach, I think that's crucial.
Yeah,
but again, I realise that it's lucky that it fell for me in that respect. But I'd say, just get as... It's not all about qualifications, so you can get all these badges and you can get as many qualifications as you want, but employers look at experience. So if you can just even have like half a season volunteering at a sport club and doing some like notational analysis or live analysis, that's for me as a, I guess, an employer would resonate more than someone that's got as many qualifications.
Yeah, sure, as sure. And that's something that we hear a lot, again, is just get out there, get doing stuff, no matter what the level, what the club, just get out there and sort of just get used to being in that environment and get comfortable in that environment.
And also, like, analysis is, once you're in, it's quite a close-knit group.
Yeah.
So, for example, when I was at Tottenham, when I came and got a job at Newcastle, one of the interns after his internship applied for the same program that I did at Tottenham.
Yeah.
So I spoke to the people at Tottenham that I previously worked with and almost like just put a good word in.
Yeah, sure.
And he was fortunate enough to get that position. So he's been at Tottenham for 3 years now. I think he's actually just left. But he was like first team assistant analyst.
Okay.
Which is great. And then if other people apply for jobs, the interns that we've currently got when they graduate in the summer, if they were to apply for jobs, we know the analysts from all like Cat 1 and Cat 2 academies.
Yeah,
so
it
is really close-knit, and you just got a lot of, it's not all about experience or qualifications. If you're just a hardworking person and just graft and show you willing to learn and just do the work, that goes a hell of a long way. It really does.
That'll
probably get you an opportunity along the career path.
And for yourself, and look, you don't have to answer this question at all, but if you do, that's great. So where do you want to go with your career then? Because you're under 23s at the moment, but I'm presuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, first team is where it's at for you as well at some point, or actually are you more of a mind of like you like the development side a bit more, or where does it work for you?
Yeah, I think when I was at Tottenham, having that first team taste was great and really good, and knowing it's about winning, I really enjoyed. But then coming to the development side of things, you still want to win. You're still aiming to win, but again, you're having that bit of a first-hand experience of developing players. So ultimately, the aim, yeah, is to work for the first team. I think that's anyone dreaming to work for a first-team environment. And I've had experiences of working up there just for like a week or so when someone's been away.
Yeah,
and just the level of detail is massive. So it is a massive jump for me if I do make that step up.
Yeah.
So that is the way I want to go. But again, it's nice just to keep developing myself within the 23s. And
yeah,
I've still got a lot to learn and learn off other coaches that come in and learn off other players. So
yeah,
I wouldn't say I'm desperate to jump ship and move up straight away, because I think that it could harm me in the long run.
Sometimes you can go up like a player. You can go up too early.
No,
and
exactly.
it can be detrimental.
Exactly. Yeah. The first team are really good, so we can see like the reports that they produce for the first team. So you get an understanding of the language that they use.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes the hardest thing when I did go up there for a week was, you know what you want to say and you understand what you want to say, but you're trying to put it on a bit of paper. You're like sitting there and you're scratching your head, and then you get a bit of advice from the first team and they just put it down on paper if I want to say it.
And again, it's a bit like you mentioned about when you're listening to the other coaches in the under-23s, you understand the language they're using, so you can be on the same page.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a bit like that. If you already understand how the first team like to put a report together or the language they use within that report, then half the job's done already, because you can fit in there a lot.
I completely agree there, definitely.
Now, you mentioned right at the start, so if we rewind back, that you were doing your coaching badges initially. Do you feel then that having a little bit of a coaching background, you might have an incredibly long coaching background, I'm making another assumption there, but do you think your coaching background has then helped you as an analyst? And if so, do you think it's worth other analysts doing a bit of coaching to get more of an understanding of the game, or actually is it something just got parked and hasn't really factored since you made that switch in your mind?
Yeah, I think so. I had my level two when I started university, and I thought that was a way to coach. And then when I started coaching at uni, they were like, what are you doing? So that's the way that the FA taught me.
But yeah,
very rigorous, and they ripped it apart, to be fair.
Okay.
And it took me a while to accept what uni were trying to teach me.
Yeah.
But then I found that's the way that coaches are now. So I'd say like level one, level two, if you can, and then probably looking at like the B license in the near future, just to, so I think I've now got that understanding of maybe like a B license.
Yeah.
But again, it's how you deliver it to players.
Yeah.
And me having experience of doing it in the opposition meetings, be interesting to see how much detail is on the B license. And I think it's good. You don't necessarily have to be out on the pitch coaching every day. Again, that coaching knowledge is
just again the language and just understanding, so you can almost understand how the coach would want it if you were in those sort of shoes.
Exactly. And also I think working analysis, you watch the game differently. So you don't watch it just where the ball is, you watch how the defence has been organised out of possession or in possession. So when you watch the game with friends or family and they're watching it completely different,
when you watch it,
it almost like ruins it a little bit, because you're enjoying it, but you're constantly thinking tactically. It's weird.
That's actually brings it around to a really good question to sort of to finish on, I think, then. So then, taking your work hat off, how do you watch football? Because I hear it a lot from people that sort of like it's almost an impossible button to switch off, where no matter what the game is, you are looking at it from an analysis or a tactical point of view, not from a today I'm a fan sort of point of view.
Yeah, it's more, I just notice more off the ball.
Yeah.
So like, you're still excited when a goal scored with the first team and things, but it's more like patterns of play and making sure like the centre mids are protecting the back.
It's weird.
It changed it, and it almost, when you do watch football now, you don't get that initial buzz that you did when you were a fan.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Which ruins it a little bit.
Yeah, so it does make it sometimes less enjoyable. I mean, there's other benefits, obviously, because you do understand what's going on a lot more, but that initial sort of buzz of wow, a game sort of tends to go away a little bit.
Exactly. And also like when I review clips like straight away, once of, for example, like the goals last night against Man U, straight away after it scored, I'll quickly watch the video back. I've got to try and give some tactical information back to the coach.
Yeah.
So you can't not be watching stuff that's off the ball. And that's something that we try and tell the interns. So when they initially come in and film games, we say it's not like the media department where it's focused and really zoomed in. Most of the time, it's more off the ball, so keep it wide.
Yeah.
And then they might focus in on the ball, but then you might lose possession, and we want to see where the back line is, and that is the position, and why are they so deep. So trying to get that into their head is quite a challenge.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So
that actually, I'd say that was the last question we're going to finish on, but you've now just brought up another question for me there. So with the tools that you've got and that you use, how the footage that you're watching, so when you're analysing Manchester United's under-23s in preparation of last night's game, how wide is that footage? Or are you literally getting the same footage that most people are getting, which is you're watching it as if it is on TV?
Yeah, we have a system, we upload it to it's called the DVMS, which is run by the Premier League.
Okay.
So everyone that films games uploads into that, and then you basically go on it and then download the game you require. All of them are wide angles, pretty much.
Right, so okay, so you have got a more tactical view.
Yeah,
right, so that's one thing that I'm immediately quite jealous of, because we for the magazine, we use Y-Scout, and we're quite open about that we use Y-Scout, but Y-Scout, typically, you're using footage from a particular media rights holder in the country, so it is being sort of viewed from a TV perspective rather than a tactical perspective, and that can make it quite challenging.
Yeah, no, it's a great tool to have, because there is sometimes you do pay teams where you don't have the luxury, and you have to go on Y-Scout and download the game.
Yeah.
It's just like you can't get the gist of what's happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially, I mean, for something like set pieces, for example, when they're not even showing you the bit that you need to be looking at to actually do some analysis on it. Again, it can be, for our guys, it can be quite frustrating. But it's interesting that there are other tools out there that you do get a better chance of doing a good job.
And even like first thing these days, you've got tactical wide angle behind the goal and the yard line. It's amazing.
Yeah.
How much you can delve into it if you really want it.
No, definitely. Great. Well, look, Aidan, thanks ever so much for your time. That's going to bring us to the end of today's podcast. And again, I really do appreciate you giving up an hour of your time to give us so much information. Guys, that is the Total Football Analysis Magazine podcast. We will be back in the not too distant future with either myself and Lee talking about some tactical talking points of recent games and events, or it'll be another interview with a professional inside a club. What we are now, we're in the middle of April already, so if you haven't bought April's magazine yet, listen to the advert that I've lovingly put together for you at the end of today's podcast, and make sure you take some action from that point. I've been Chris Darwin, and I've been lucky enough to spend some time with Hayden Rockle, under-23 analyst at Newcastle United today. Thank you. Hi folks, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you're still listening now, I think we can agree you might have done. If you want to get even more tactical analysis from us, you want to head over to totalfootballanalysis.com. Over there, you can get over 100 pieces of written analysis a month for as little as £2, as well as taking out an annual subscription to our monthly digital magazine. And because we like you, we are offering 10% off all subscriptions to Total Football Analysis magazine if you use the discount code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST, you use it at the checkout, and that will mean you get 12 months of website and magazine for just £45. That's a good deal, folks. I would cash in on that if I were you.